Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The following is a presentation of the Belly Up Sports Media Network.
Here's what's cooking on today's Sports Stove podcast. We're talking NFL draft, college basketball's newest hire, the NHL on the move, Major League Baseball news, and a little bit of Talladega. That's what's cooking on today's Sports Stove podcast.
From Belly Up Sports and the Belly Up Podcast Network, you're listening to the Sports Stove podcast with your host, Vince Stover.
Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up in me?
Welcome in to an all-new edition of the Sports Stove Podcast, presented by Righteous Felon Jerky. Now is the time to join the flavor revolution, and you can do it at righteousfelon.com. If you use the code STOVE15, STOVE15, you're going to get 15% off your purchase. So go to righteousfelon.com and find your new favorite jerky flavor at righteousfelon.com, promo code STOVE15. I'm your host, Vince Stover, joined as I am pretty much every week by my dad, Dale Stover. Dad, how you doing?
Doing good, doing good. Like I said, definitely busy time of the year here and exciting. You know, the NFL draft is one of the more exciting things, but a lot going on with playoffs starting in the NHL and the NBA and just, you know, all kinds of stuff going on. Just had the Masters. We've got, NASCAR, just a lot going on, that's for sure.
What was your sport of choice this week on the television? Was it the Masters? Was it Texas and NASCAR? Was it something else?
I watched a little bit of NASCAR. I wanted to, but I kind of watched the Masters probably more there, just to see. So I watched something this week that I'd never watched before in my life, and you'll be a little disappointed, but I actually watched a little bit of the WNBA draft. So okay. I would have never thought I would have done that, but even though I knew who was going to get drafted first, Johnny, we'll have to talk about that sometime. That's going to be real interesting. I'm trying to think through how this will affect the WNBA, but anyhow, can't say I have, you know, still a massive amount of interest, but I have paid more attention to it than usual.
Sure. Yeah, I guess that would be true. I did watch it as well, and I didn't watch it on TV. I paid attention to it. One of the girls I've had on the show on my local hour has entered the WNBA or attempted to at the very least, did not get drafted. Didn't figure that she would, but I figured towards the end, I'd keep an eye on what was going on there and see maybe if she gets a chance to go to camp or something like that as well. But yeah, that's a conversation for another day though, the WNBA, because that's not on my list of things to talk about tonight for sure. I do want to start though with another topic that we don't talk a whole lot about, and that is hockey. The NHL has approved the move for the Arizona Coyotes. Are they Phoenix or Arizona? I always forget which they are. Arizona Coyotes.
Arizona.
They're going to, looks like, move to Utah. There's still a couple things that would have to get done, but overall the approval is there. Arizona's a place that we've spent a fair amount of time in our lives, and I was never a Coyotes fan, but that being said, anytime you move a sports team out. And it seems like just a couple of weeks ago, they showed this, you know, this drawing of what their new stadium was going to look like in Arizona. And now we're seeing, no, that's not going to happen probably. And they're going to head off to Salt Lake City. So I don't know. Well, I figured you might have some opinion on Arizona losing their hockey team.
Well, in some ways, it's not surprising because, like I said, we spent a lot of time in Arizona. And I remember when the Coyotes first went there, and they were the Phoenix Coyotes for a while and then became the Arizona Coyotes. And actually, I had a chance. I don't know if you ever did, but I had a chance to go to a couple games there. And, you know, there's definitely, I mean, Phoenix is such a big area. There's definitely a lot of hockey fans there, but they've never really had the support. They've had trouble, you know, getting an arena before, then they got the one built right out there by the football stadium. And I would have thought that would have been stable, you know, but it wasn't. And they just haven't had the support, you know, from, you know, the taxpayers or whatever it takes to do it. I'm sure there's enough fan support there, but Utah is going to be, I think, a really good place for the NHL. One, they really want a team. They got an owner with deep pockets there, so that's going to be good from that. But Utah, you know, as a place as far as winter sports and stuff like that, I think it'll fit very well. Right now, you know, they have 32 teams. They really don't need to or want to expand a whole lot. But I think Arizona, if they can ever get the stadium thing worked out, will be the next, you know, team to get a team back. From there, I know the commissioner, they wanted to keep people in Arizona, but, you know, it just wasn't going to work. And so I think Utah will be a good spot for a new, you know, for an NHL team, won't be a new team. And, you know, they'll get support there. So the NHL, I saw this week that the other day with 18 games left still in the season then, not now, they had already broken an attendance record of all time. So the NHL has grown, like you said, a year ago. Once the fact they got on ESPN, they got a little more publicity. You know, definitely they have strong fan bases, I think, in probably about every city where they're at. And so it's, yeah, it has grown. And we won't talk probably much tonight about the playoffs, but like I've heard you say many times, playoff hockey, it's really hard to beat that. It's very exciting.
Yeah, in the stadium, in the arena, live playoff hockey is probably the most exciting sporting event I've ever been to. And it is a lot of fun. It's funny, I was going through, found a box this week, and my wife did, and she wanted me to clean it out, figure out what's in it, get rid of things that I didn't need and all that kind of stuff. And I found in it a couple things that our podcast listeners aren't going to enjoy this, but maybe our YouTube viewers will. I found my, Smashville Stanley Cup, 2010 Stanley Cup playoff, towel in there. And then there's also a, I love Smashville, Predators towel there as well. So I found those this week. You're coming down this weekend. So maybe if you want them, I got a couple Packer pennants. I found two, a couple things. So maybe I got some swag for you if you want it, when you come down this weekend. But, you know, hockey, Dan, is probably the most fan wise and how people view it. It's probably the most like baseball than any other sport. It's very regionalized. I feel like when you are in that area, you support that team. I know Nashville was that way at the very least. And I just, I don't know. They've not been great at getting it still nationalized, but I think the outdoor games have been fun. And I think now since they do it so often, maybe it's lost a little bit of its luster, but I like the stadium games where they go out and play in a football stadium. And it seems like the players generally enjoy that kind of thing too. But I don't know that I'll watch or pay attention to any of the NHL hockey playoffs. But I don't know. I might keep an eye on what the Predators are doing. But outside of that, they have not yet roped me back in into hockey. So we'll see. But part of that is, again, it's just hard to view. I don't have anything. I don't get the channels and I don't pay for cable or anything like that. And nothing that I stream gets me hockey. So needless to say, I'm still out on hockey, but that's okay. It is fun to go to live for sure. Let's transition to college basketball. Last week, I told you I had a source told me it was going to be an NBA coach coming to Kentucky. My source is an idiot, completely wrong. And I appreciate our viewers that messaged me to let me know that as well. But that being said, Kentucky did go out and hire Mark Pope, former player, 1996 champion. The fan base in Lexington is excited about the Mark Pope era. Not everyone was. Well, I say that. I think everyone or large majority of people locally were excited the moment it was announced. The idea of having a former player back, someone who truly loves the university, that was a big deal. And now the national people definitely were not all on board with it. But I think locally the large majority of people were. And what Mark Pope has done to re-energize Big Blue Nation. And you might say, well, did they need to be re-energized? 100% they did. But he comes in, he says all the right things, does all the right things. The question simply comes down to, can he recruit the right players to come in and compete? That is yet to be seen. And but I'll tell you what, Dad, did you see the stuff that Rick Pitino said about Mark Pope? Did you see those clips?
No, I didn't.
Okay, well, most people probably did, but Rick Pitino sent out a whole video sitting in his office at St. John's, praising the hire of Mark Pope, talking about Mark Pope, who he was, and what he loves about Kentucky and how he is going to represent Kentucky so well. Earlier, Rick Pitino said if Mark Pope needs NIL money, he'll send them a check. So it's pretty crazy to see another sitting basketball coach promote another university's hire. But it's been fun, and now it's just kind of a wait game to see how the recruiting goes and what kind of team he puts on the floor. And we'll see from there. But any thoughts, Dad, on Mark Pope becoming the next Kentucky basketball coach?
No, you know, I think it's always good, or it's always energizing, like you said, when a college gets an alumni, someone who's played for him, to come back and coach. It isn't always successful, but I think it definitely, you know, adds excitement for people there at the university. So, and he's probably a good coach. Like you said, the question will be if he can recruit.
Yeah. The next big thing that'll come out is a staff. And that'll be announced. It sounds like next week, maybe Monday or Tuesday. It sounds like they're going to try to wait till they get everybody in and announce who it is. So that'll be interesting to see as well. There's been some speculation that actually one of Coach Cal's assistants is going to stick around. He's brought already one guy from BYU as a coach, and then we'll see. We'll see what happens and who he has on his staff. He's going to need big time recruiters on his staff. That's there's no question when it comes to that as well. So far, all the recruits that he has landed look exactly the same. It looks like the 1996, some of the 1996 basketball team. So we'll see how that goes. I don't know how to say that any more politically correct than that. Let's move on to the NFL, Dad. The NFL draft is a week away from tonight, correct? First yep. round. I will be live on the Belly Up YouTube channel next week to talk about the Green Bay Packers pick as it happens. This week we're here to talk about, because I've already predicted what the NFL draft is going to do. I did it in my NFL mock draft 2.0 earlier this week on bellyupsports.com. And so let's talk a little bit about that and kind of what we see changing next week. By the way, our show next week, me and Dad will both give our final mock drafts and tell you exactly what's going to shake down on Thursday night of the draft. But Dad, it starts off pretty simple. Caleb Williams 1 to Chicago and Jaden Daniels 2 to Washington. This is a consensus across the board what's going to happen. Could there be a surprise? I suppose there could be, but it seems like everyone is pretty locked in and feels pretty confident. Chicago's going Caleb Williams. Washington's going Jaden Daniels at number 2. But then the question comes up to number 3. And right now I've got the Patriots staying put at 3, taking Drake May. But all reports say that New England is willing to move out if the right offer comes. That being said, I don't know that. That's starting to tell me that maybe they don't love quarterback number three. And if the right quarterback comes to them, they'll take them. Otherwise, they'll be happy to move out and let someone else jump up and take Drake May at number three. What are your thoughts on New England? Should they move up? Should they stay there? Are you confident in what Drake May can do?
I would think, you know, that they would want to stay there. But again, you know, New England, it may be, you know, they feel like there's some other, there'd be a choice of some other quarterbacks. And if they could get a deal where they, you know, really benefited them as far as draft picks, maybe even players, then, you know, then I can see where they would be willing to do that. But I think it's one thing to say they're willing to move out of there. I would expect them to make that pick there, and I would assume to take May. But, you know, we will see. See where that goes. I think the quarterback thing will be interesting because I still think, and again, I'm in the process of working on my mock draft, but there are several teams that need quarterbacks. And I'm just not sure, you know, who's going to move around and try to get that, or who's fine with, you know, a couple of the next two quarterbacks that aren't in the top four.
Yeah. So when you look at it, obviously the Patriots deal at number three comes down to how much do they like the next quarterback, whether it's Drake May, whether it's JJ McCarthy, whoever it may be, how much do they like that person? Because I really think there's a solid chance that there could be a quarterback sitting there at number 11 where Minnesota is currently sitting. I think there's a chance that one of those top four could be there. I don't know that for certain, and I think a lot of it depends on what happens at number three. That being said, Dad, I think Arizona stays put at number four, but I think at number five, the Chargers are the most likely to trade out. And everyone says Minnesota's coming up to get J.J. McCarthy. I still think Minnesota would prefer to go up and get Drake May. And I don't know that if Drake May's gone at three and Minnesota doesn't go up and get him, I don't know that Minnesota goes up to get a quarterback. They might as well just stay put at 11 and kind of see what happens and maybe take a shot at a second-round quarterback for next year. I mean, they got Sam Darnold. They've got an offensive system that should work for Sam Darnold. You know, and he's not going to take him to the Super Bowl. But that being said, there's no reason to jump up just to get a quarterback if you don't believe in that quarterback. And I don't have great I don't have sources on this or anything, but I think Minnesota wants Drake May, and if they can't get him, I think they're patient. And I don't think they go up. They use picks 11 and 23 to build, because that team has a lot of holes right now. So they use picks 11 and 23 to build a team, and then maybe next year go for the quarterback of choice or even a free agent quarterback down the road too. In my mock draft, though, I've got J.J. McCarthy going five to Minnesota. Currently, obviously, there's Denver who could move up. There's the Giants who could decide they want to draft a quarterback. Those are probably the teams to watch right now when it comes to the quarterback for sure. Dad, and Kevin, thanks for watching. Kevin asked the question, what's your take on McCarthy? I'm not sold on him. I'm just not. I don't think he is a Super Bowl winning quarterback. I think he could have a career and play and all that kind of stuff, but I put him right there with the Will Levis of last year where he's got some potential, but he's not a top 10 draft pick. And, I don't know, Dad, I would have a hard time pulling the trigger on JJ McCarthy.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I think, again, with the right coach and in the right system, he may be able to be a starting NFL quarterback. That may be, you know, that may be possible. But I don't know that he is one of the top ones here. But again, you know, you see that, you know, you see experts saying that you're going to have the first four picks are going to be quarterbacks, you know, that he's going to go. But I agree with you. I think if they waited till 11, they could probably get a quarterback that would work for them. And maybe May is who they want there. Of course, if he's who they want, maybe they could go up to get New England's spot, you know, from there. Again, they've got the most ammunition with two two picks in the early picks in the first round. But I think Denver's an interesting one to play in this. And I've been hearing that the Giants may take a quarterback. You know, they've paid a lot of money where they're at. I think they would be very wise to get a quarterback. I don't know that they have their quarterback situation solved, but I, again, you know, they're in a spot where they're going to be able to get a very good player. And that's the thing, the top 15, 16 or more picks, there's some really good football players people are going to get. And you don't always want to pass that up.
Yeah, we need to come back to what you said, though, about the Giants picking a quarterback. You said that you think they should. Do you think they should at six, or do you just think that they need another quarterback?
I think they need another quarterback, and I think it depends who's there at six or how they have them, you know, they have them ranked from there. Again, you know, I think it's a possibility. I don't have the second round in front of me, but if the Giants pick where they do in the second round, I kind of think on the quarterback thing that someone from the second round is going to move up late in the first round and take a quarterback late in the first round. But you know, we'll see if that happens or not. And I think there's several teams that could do that. And they would be one of them. The Raiders would be one of them, and teams like that.
So I don't think, honestly, I think we're only going to see four quarterbacks in the first round. I think both Nix and Penix go in the second round. And I think people move up in the second round, just like Will Levis and the Titans last year. I think we're at that point now where people understand I cannot take a quarterback in round one unless I trust that quarterback fully. I can take him, however, in round two, and I can trade up in round two to go get him, and it doesn't hurt near as bad, and you know, I can survive that a little bit better. Talking about the Giants, Dad, they have holes upon holes upon holes. They need so much. No matter if they draft a quarterback at six, they 100% will not win the Super Bowl this year. Now, granted, if they don't draft a quarterback, they 100% will not win a Super Bowl this year either. My point is there's no reason to draft a quarterback at six when you're probably going to be bad again next year. So why not wait and see? Maybe you get pick number one next year. So go out and start building the other pieces of your team to prepare it for the next quarterback. At six, I've got them taking Rome Odunze as the second wide receiver off the board, with Harrison going to Arizona at four. Malik Nabers is considered by most to be the better over Rome Odunze. But I don't know, Dad. There's something about Odunze that just is safer. And I think the Giants go there. They could go Nabers as well from LSU. Wide receivers, though, Dan, I've got in this mock draft, I've got Nabers actually falling down to number 12 at Denver, who desperately needs wide receivers as well. After that, I think the next wide receiver is down towards the bottom at 23. I've got the Chargers trading down from 5 to get 11 and 23. I've got them taking Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU. And then I've got some wide receivers late, Kansas City going Adonai Mitchell at 32, and I had Buffalo going Xavier Worthy at 28 as well. I think wide receivers is going to be one of the more fun thing in the first day of the draft to see kind of where things wind up, who has who, especially after the top three, how people have those wide receivers graded out is going to be really intriguing because the rankings are pretty broad. Once you get past those three, there's a lot of guys that go in a lot of different spots from people there. Dad, any thoughts on the wide receivers in round one?
Well, again, there's a lot of good wide receivers. Like I said, I think probably there's three, you know, that are at the top. But with as many as there are, it looks to me like wide receiver is a position where a team could definitely wait till the second round and say, hey, I'm going to get a good wide receiver there. So to me, that's a position that could fall a little bit out of the first round. Just because there's a lot of them. On the other hand, people need wide receivers. And again, you know, everybody has them ranked differently, and there's some really fast ones. And, you know, they may be somebody that would take, you know, you jump up and say, I've seen some mock drafts where some of the guys after the top three go pretty high because, you know, somebody really wants them. But it looks to me like you can definitely in the second round and maybe even later than that get a really good wide receiver from there. So I think they could drop for that reason.
I was listening to Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks on the Move the Sticks podcast, and they went through the second round picks at wide receiver recently, and it's not been good. Now, we're Packer fans, and we're used to second round receivers turning out for Green Bay, but statistically, second round receivers have not been good. And I don't know that anybody will pay attention to that come draft night, but it seems like your safety is your top three receivers, and then your hit or miss late first round and second round wide receivers after that. I do want to talk about New York Giants, Dad, or Jets, excuse me. I've got them going offensive line. I've said it time and time again. Aaron Rodgers, everyone says you need to get him weapons. You need to get him weapons. You need to get him weapons. No. You have to protect him. You have to keep him standing upright so he doesn't have to run and tear his Achilles. You've got to take care of him. I've got him going Fuaga from Oregon State, who seems to be moving up. But again, these offensive linemen, pretty much after Joe Alt, Notre Dame, the offensive line rankings are, it's all the same guys, but it's all in different orders. Yep. Everybody has things that they like and don't like. But, Dad, do you think the Jets need to go and get a playmaker, a Brock Bowers, whose name comes around all the time with the Jets? I've got him going 11 in this draft, or one of these receivers, if one of the top three fall, or do you think that they need to go offensive line and protect Rodgers?
Well, I think with the strength of this draft, I think offensive line makes sense because they're going to be able to get somebody that they can plug in and should be able to start and play right away. And you're right. I mean, not just Aaron Rodgers, every quarterback needs protection, you know, to be able to run the system. Right. And there's a lot of good, you know, offensive linemen there. Does he need weapons? Yes. Does he think he needs weapons? Probably not. You're right about that. But they'll be able to get some help for him down the line. I don't think there's a problem with that. It looks to me like with the strength of offensive line, that would make sense. And you're right. The offensive linemen, it's all over the board as far as the first round is concerned. And there's potential for a lot of them to go in the first round. But they really jump all over the place. I mean, like you said, after Alt, sometimes it's the Penn State guy right away. Then, no, it's the Oregon State guy. And then the guy from Washington. I heard a mock draft where the Latham from Alabama went down 26, I believe it was, or whatever, or 24 to Dallas. You know, and I've seen that a couple of times where he has fallen down. And, you know, again, you've got a couple interior offensive linemen. Some of them are high in the draft. Some of them aren't even in the first round.
Right.
That's really going to be interesting to see where it goes. And I don't think it'll be a run on the offensive line. You know, sometimes it's, boy, somebody picks and then the next four are going to be boom, boom, boom. I think there's people that want offensive linemen, but I don't know that it's going to be a run because I think everybody's got different ones that they like.
I think between 10 and 22, you're going to see a bunch of offensive linemen go off the board. I've got, of course, at 10, I already told you, I've got Fuaga from Oregon State to the Jets. I've got Fashanu from Penn State to the Saints, Latham to the Raiders, Graham Barton to Philadelphia, and Fontenot from Washington to Miami. So I feel like there's going to be a lot in that general range. But again, that's a trading range. It's where people can move up and go get a receiver they want. That's where people can go up and get a defensive guy they want, because the same thing with edge rushers, there's kind of a good variety of rankings as far as where people have them sitting. I still stick at number 8 with Atlanta to Jared Verse from Florida State going before Dallas Turner from Alabama. I just think Versus got that that pop, that flair that maybe Dallas Turner does not have. I've got Atlanta taking him at 8. I've got the Bears taking Dallas Turner at 9. And then after that, it gets fun when you talk about the edge rushers. Right now, I've got Latu going to the Rams, the UCLA edge rusher. And then I've also got Chop Robinson going to Dallas at 24. And I guess that's the last edge rusher, technically. Darius Robinson, a DN from Missouri. I've got him going at 29 to the Lions also. But I think defense as a whole is going to be an interesting draft in the first round, Dad, because cornerbacks, we know there's going to be some taken. The question is which ones? Edge rushers, what order are they going to go in? A couple D linemen, Jerzon Newton from Illinois, and then Byron, Murphy. Byron Murphy from Texas. I got him going at 16 to Seattle. So I think all the defensive picks are going to be really intriguing here in round one and probably get some names that we didn't expect, especially later in round one.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And like I said, different mock drafts, you see those edge rushers all over the place. You know, I've seen Latu up pretty high. I've even seen Robinson from Missouri up fairly high. I've seen Chop Robinson not even in the first round. Right. So, you know, it kind of moves around there. But like I said, I think Verse and Turner are both going to go fairly quick because, again, unless you're stacked at edge rusher, that's a position you've got to have. And yeah. So the teams, you know, there's going to be teams that are going to move on those pretty quick. And, of course, we haven't talked about defensive backs yet. And there's quite a few good ones there also. So, you know, everybody can't be drafted in the first round. So it's going to be interesting. And the second round could have a lot of movement because there could be, you know, the first 8 or 10 players could be, you know, guys that a lot of people thought were in the first round.
Sure. Green Bay, I've got them taking Nate Wiggins, Clemson cornerback. I've had cornerback both times I've done my mocks. So far, I just feel like that's the biggest area of need. And I feel like there's a lot of guys there. And just like Eric Stokes a couple years ago, there's who knows how they have him ranked. I just feel like this is a prime spot. If they don't move, I think at 25 is a prime spot for them to take a cornerback to help strengthen that back end for their defense. Everybody tunes in to hear our Packer talk, Dad. Who do you think the Packers are going to take at 25?
I think the question is, are they going to stay at 25? And, you know, that's going to depend if they've got somebody they've really targeted up higher. If they stay at 25, I think a defensive back would be good. I think the kid from Iowa would be good. In some mock drafts, he goes much higher. Yeah. I've seen other mock drafts where, you know, he was down, you know, 23 and on down near the bottom. The thing about him in Green Bay is he can play safety. He can play in different positions. And that's probably something that would really work for them. And it seems with the new defensive coordinator, you know, with him being a ball hawk, that really fits in a lot of ways. But I saw your thing on Wiggins and I looked him up. He's extremely fast and they love fast corners. Everybody does. So, you know, I've seen Kool-Aid McKistry thrown out, you know, in the Green Bay area there quite a bit also. It looks like this kid from Toledo is really, really good. So I don't think he'll be there at that pick. I've seen some people really moving up to get him. And, like I said, there are some really good players, and it all depends on how teams have them evaluated. But I think when we get done Thursday night with the first round, it's going to be, and we look at the list of who's left, there's going to be some real wows on there. And, you know, then we'll see how the second round starts out.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you get down to the bottom of the draft and Buffalo's in desperate need of a wide receiver.
Yep.
Do they try to move up for one? Do they wait? Do they take, you know, a couple, you know, throughout the draft and maybe go somewhere else in round one? All possibilities. Baltimore and San Francisco. I've got Baltimore taking Max Melton, cornerback from Rutgers. There's a few cornerbacks out there, Dan, that are going to be some people are going to have them ranked as a first round, and some will have them ranked as a second round. And I think the cornerback, especially in these last, I don't know, 10 picks of the first round, it could be a number of different guys. And it just depends on how the team has them graded out versus how everyone else has them graded out. I like Max Melton. It seems like he's done really well with his interviews and things like that. Obviously, his brother plays for the Packers, so that would be a cool story if he ends up in Green Bay. That being said, Tyler Guyton I've got going to the 49ers at 31, the O-lineman out of Oklahoma. And again, I think I have 8 O-linemen going in the first round. But Guyton's one of those guys who's had a good career in college and maybe dropped a little bit sometimes and then up a little bit and kind of down and all these kind of different places. I just think he's a really good fit there in San Francisco as well. Those are probably my 2 favorite picks out of this mock draft 2.0, having Melton at 30 and Guyton at 31. Will they stay there for 3.0? I have no idea. I'll work on that next week and have that ready, obviously, when we come back next week on there. Any other thoughts on the draft? And again, we're going to spend most of our show next week on the draft, but any thoughts on the draft? Anything else?
No, like I said, as I've started to look at it, I was surprised at how many good players they are. Really, when you look at the mock drafts, the first 20, 21 picks, a lot of the same players. They're in a different order or whatever. But when you drop down to the last picks, especially the last 5 or 6 picks, there are a lot of players and a lot of names that come up then. So, I think the trades will be very interesting. Like I said, it would make sense for Buffalo, to go up and get somebody if they can make the right deal with somebody because of their need, and you may have some like that. So the trading around will be very interesting. Like I said, I think when we get to the bottom of the first round, you could see some people second round, people trading up to get that second pick in the first round near the end. And you and I have talked just a little bit. Be interesting to see if there's much trading of players. Probably won't be. There's not usually around the draft, but that could be an interesting, it only takes 1 or 2 of those to really change things. So we'll see.
Yeah. And it's been a couple years, but back when, Philadelphia got AJ Brown, that was a huge draft day deal. Those kinds of trades are interesting. And you might have that with receivers, Dad, especially look at Buffalo. They need a number one receiver. You never know. There might be someone looking to get off of a disgruntled guy or, make a change or whatever it may be. I think that's intriguing for sure. I love the draft. I'm looking forward to it next week. It's going to be a lot of fun for sure. All right, Dad. I think that's all we're going to cover in this segment. Anything else you want to mention before we send you on your way?
Nope. Like I said, we've already talked more about hockey, which has been good. Like I said, do want to congratulate the Predators for making the playoffs. And I'm anxious to see when it's going to be. We know who they're going to play, Vancouver. But again, a lot of excitement. But it's pretty much going to be NFL draft here, leading up to this time next week. No doubt about it.
100% for sure. Well, Dad, I'm looking forward. We'll see you this weekend. You're coming down for about 24 hours, and looking forward to seeing you and Mom this weekend here in Kentucky as we celebrate our church anniversary, 10-year church anniversary this week. So we're excited about that. Dad, thanks as always. Appreciate you coming on and chatting with us, and we will talk to you again soon. We're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, Righteous Felon Jerky. When we come back, we're talking NASCAR.
Say hello to America's most wanted craft beef jerky. Over 15 flavors with all kinds of character. The number one jerky gift box and all natural black Angus quality made right here in the U.S. of A. Taste the flavor revolution at RighteousFelon.com. Use the promo code STOVE15 at checkout. That's RighteousFelon.com. Promo code STOVE15 at checkout.
It's time to talk racing in a segment we call the Sports Stove Final Lap. And joining us once again to talk some NASCAR racing is the host of the Stage Break podcast, the one and only Josh King. Hey, Josh, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. How you doing?
I am doing phenomenal. It's been a hot week here in Kentucky. I don't know what it's like down there where you are, but it's starting to feel like sports weather all the way around, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty warm down here. I was talking to my dad earlier today. He's up in Pennsylvania and enjoying the weather, maybe a little bit hotter than he likes. And down here in Florida, it hit 90 degrees in the car on the way home from work today. So it's getting pretty hot down here, and it's not even summer yet. So,
well, things are heating up in the NASCAR season as well. Hey, how about that for a seamless transition? Chase Elliott gets a win after a little bit of a drought. And it seems like everything is right in the NASCAR world again for some reason after that victory. I want to talk a little bit. We're going to get into Chase Elliott a little bit here in a second. But me and Dad were talking earlier in the show about NHL, and it just reminded me with NASCAR. I hate that they've gone to FS1 for these last couple races, mainly because I don't have FS1.
That is a bummer.
Like, Yeah. I feel like popularity of a sport is so dependent on being available to as many viewers as possible. And I know there's been a lot going on with March Madness, and now we got other playoffs getting going and things like that too. But what are your thoughts on the general either success or failure of NASCAR to just be available to people to see it?
That was something that was a bigger problem for me in the past. Probably 3 years ago on was more of an issue for me, where I really just had over the air channels. And so if it wasn't on Fox or NBC, I didn't get to watch the live broadcast, traditionally. So, now it's, you know, with the streaming services, it's a lot more accessible, and I haven't really had to face it a lot as of late. I've actually been, I think a little bit impressed. I actually had this thought that they've been on Fox more than it feels like they have in the past, as opposed to FS1. So I think they've probably done a little bit of a better job. I don't know if they've really done a better job, but to me, it feels like they have, of having more races on major networks, and not something that you either have to have cable or a streaming service to access. But there obviously is a lot of talk of NASCAR going to, you know, the CW. I think the Xfinity right. series is going to the CW at some point. The stuff with, you know, NBC's networks and, you know, different Fox networks and Netflix getting involved and Prime getting involved. And there's a lot of variety out there of potential options. For me, I don't know that it's really changing my life a whole lot. So I haven't really thought about it a bunch. But It is something that, you know, as a NASCAR fan, you don't want to, you know, get home on Sunday after church or just, you know, going throughout your Sunday and want to watch the race. And lo and behold, you don't have it. And so that's obviously would be a bummer for any NASCAR fan.
Yeah. Now, I will say this, and we've talked about this. I don't remember if it was with you or Chris or someone else, but the NASCAR app is so good, and you can listen to the radio call of the race, and you can turn on some of the cameras from inside the cars and those kinds of things, which is good. And I do that. Texas this week, I did not get a chance to listen to much of it, some of the stage two more than anything else. And I did that on purpose because I had a guy sitting in my fantasy garage and I had to figure out if I wanted to put him in or not.
Right.
I figured out, all right, what's going on with this guy? So yep. I, you know, turn on a camera, turn on the radio, figure out what's going on with them. But it seems like overall Texas had a pretty positive review, and especially coming off of a subpar, especially a subpar race the previous week. Were you happy with Texas, and general thoughts on how the race went in your mind?
Yeah, I'm happy with it. I believe I look at it from two vantage points, from a race fan, one who's watching the race from home. I thought it was a good race. You had action, but that action was really centered around cars completely losing it out of turn two and just spinning, either losing grip, turn two or turn four, you know, one of those two places, cars wrecking. And so it wasn't a whole lot of action in relation to passing. There was more action from incidents happening on the racetrack. So, you know, as a race fan and someone who enjoys a lot of action on the track, I mean, we certainly got it. I think it was a record number of cautions this last weekend at Texas. There, a lot of options for drivers to play different strategies because of the caution flags that we got. So it was definitely an entertaining race. From the other perspective, that I think I would lean more this way. I would rather see a race go green, but have action on the track, have a lot of battles, have a lot of passing, and not to the extent of what we saw at Bristol, but something along those lines.
Yeah,
where the tires, you have to really handle them well as a driver and make sure you don't abuse them or wear them out too quickly. So you have to really pick and choose when you take advantage of the grip that you have. And what that would do is it allow drivers to, you know, make passes pretty much whenever they want to, but it's a risk versus reward, you know, take a little now, but I'm going to lose a little later, and just have something like that.
Yeah.
We really didn't have a whole lot of that at Texas. So I think in the end, I would lean towards it being a good race. But looking at it both sides, it was a great race because of cautions, because of green, white checkers, multiple green, white checkers. I mean, a two lap shootout to get to the official end of regulation laps, and then two green, white checkers out on top of that. So we got a lot of excitement, a lot of drama. It just kind of depends on which. How do you define a good race? Is that something that is, you know, laden with cautions, or is it there really wasn't that much carnage on the track, but there was a lot of good action that we got to see. So it kind of just depends on which way you lean on that.
Do you think that coming off of Richmond and Martinsville, which weren't that exciting, maybe made it feel a little better than it was? Or do you think it would just stood on its own as it was what it was?
I could see that, you know, it just, you know, a couple of weeks of lackluster, struggling to find some storylines to talk about, and especially Martinsville.
Yeah.
That one was just a long race. If you just wanted to sit and watch it, I think on my show when I talked about it, I said you can watch the last 5 minutes of the race and pretty much catch all the action that happened, with the exception of a few things. I mean, that was really it. Like that green, white checker at the end. Yeah. That was the bulk of the excitement. So, that was a 400 lap race. 400, so, that's crazy that it comes down to two out of 400. The percentages of a good race aren't that great there.
So that's where listening to the race is better than watching the race, because you're just at the will of the broadcast, and they do a pretty good job of making it sound like there's stuff happening.
Yeah, and that was actually something I was going to say in regards to if you don't have FS1 or, NBC Sports or whatever, the NASCAR site, if you pull it up on a laptop, you can really actually combine that with the live broadcast, radio broadcast. And I actually enjoy the radio broadcast calling better than what you get on TV. It's just on TV, you get more information because you have the cameras and, you know, the pit reporters and everything kind of coming together. But I like the way that the broadcasters on the radio actually call the race a lot better. So you can combine that with the live video feeds and actually turn into a pretty enjoyable race to watch if you got the time to do it. Even still, they know how to do their job pretty well and paint a picture in your mind.
Yeah. I grew up, I'm much older than you, and I grew up, radio was a big part, man. Minor league baseball and things like that. I love listening to radio broadcasts, whether it's baseball, whether it's hockey, whether it's racing. To me, it's fun. And you got to give, credit to those broadcasters who do a great job. And like I said, I was sitting there listening to the Martinsville race, and you would have had to have called and told me, hey, this isn't fun. And I'm listening to everything after, over the week after, and everybody's like, it was horrible. I can't believe it. I'm like, man, it didn't sound that boring. Right. So shout out to, I think it was MRN that did that one. But shout out to the radio broadcast each week from NASCAR for sure. Chase Elliott gets the win. And it's been a while, but he's been decent this year, and finally gets back to the winner's circle. What does this mean for him? Obviously for Hendrick, just keep on winning, but what does it mean specifically for Chase Elliott?
Yeah, I think he's got to keep it up. I've been saying this on my show for a little while that I feel like he's been building momentum, and that initially showed in his qualifying efforts. He was qualifying better, but wasn't necessarily getting the race results from that you maybe would anticipate. But all that to say, just looking at like last year, transitioning to this year, it just seemed like that organization, that team had just, is just a tick better each week. So they've obviously gotten to the point now they've won. And it's something that I think, I don't think it was necessarily a one-off win for them. Just because of the momentum that I think they've been building, I think they have the potential to continue it and get some solid results each and every week. And I think that's probably what they need to do. Just winning once, I don't think is enough to solidify your spot in the playoffs and necessarily contend for a strong run. So I think their next goal is obviously to get trophies, but you know, next to that is and very close to that is really just have solid weeks, solid races where they're not filled with mistakes on pit road. They're not filled with mistakes on the racetrack. You know, they're putting themselves into positions where they're kind of controlling their own destiny a little bit. They're not putting themselves in compromised situations as much and, you know, come away with a good finish. Going to be really hard to do that this weekend, but just for the races ahead, just kind of manage your season. So yeah. I think they've got everything lined up to be able to do that. And it's been the question of Hendrick for quite some time is why is the 5 and the 24 doing well and not the 9 and the 48? So they've got the resources to do it. And I think maybe just things are starting to click now. So if they can keep running with that, I think they'll have a solid season.
A few weeks ago, you asked the question, what's wrong with the Fords?
Yeah.
do we know yet? You know, I mean, it seems like there's weeks where Blaney and there's weeks where Logano and even Keselowski has run better here as of late too, but they're still not in the winner's circle either. So
they're not.
What are we figuring out with Ford?
I'm not convinced that there's a huge issue yet. It is very difficult to win a race, obviously. And you just look at the probability of 38 cars, one winner. You have a 1 in 38 shot if everything is equal, you know. Yeah. And so it's, and it, just because Ford hasn't won yet doesn't mean that they are way behind. Right. Especially you look at qualifying times and the distance, not the distance, the time between the pole winner and like 20th place. Yeah. When it's 3/10 of a second, not 3 seconds or a second and a half, that's a, the field is so tight. And so no, they haven't gotten into the winner's circle yet, but they're in the top 10 often. Yeah. And even last week there were a lot of them towards the front, and Fords have led laps. They haven't won a race, and I don't think they've won the they've led the most laps.
Right.
But they're there. So they haven't won. I think you could easily say they're at a little bit of a disadvantage. There seems to be, at least just, you know, looking at performance. But I think it's really just maybe just one adjustment, one little thing here and there could really, you know, alter it and, you know, flip the tables a little bit. So go ahead. If
Blaney inches out Daniel Suarez in Atlanta, mm-hmm. are we having the same conversation because they have been running up towards the front and having some decent races? Like, does that one win, if he won it in Atlanta, would that have changed the conversation around Fords?
Maybe a little. I don't know if it would have completely stopped it, because with the exception of Suarez and Trackhouse, the rest of the wins have come from Hendrick Motorsports and Joe Gibbs Racing.
Yeah.
You know, Chevy and Toyota, but just two powerhouse organizations. Penske is probably really close to them as far as, you know, who are the, you know, team power rankings and who have shown a lot of success lately, good finishes, strong runs, laps led, all that stuff. You know, Penske's probably up there. RFK is probably up there on that list too, as far as Fords go. But even if Blaney won that race, you would still have HMS and Joe Gibbs really just dominant throughout the season. So not nearly as much of a conversation piece, but I would still think people would still talk about it.
All right, well, let's talk about what's coming up this week at Talladega. One of the more well-known tracks out there, of course. If you had to describe Talladega with one word, what would that word be?
Intense.
Yeah.
Super speedway racing is intense to begin with. You with everybody packed together, these drivers, they have to be on their toes at all times. They have to be listening to their spotter and trusting their spotter, because if their spotter says there's a hole, if they're trying to get somewhere and there's a hole, they say take it, they've got to move. And if they don't, in that one moment, that hole could be gone. Mm-hmm. And if they hesitate, it could cause the big one. So yeah. And that's all race long. Like yeah. That doesn't stop from the drop of the green flag to the end. That's almost how it is. Maybe the one break would be during green flag pit stops when everything cycles out and you have different teams doing different pit strategies and or different organizations pitting together, like Chevy's together or Ford's together, where it's going to shift things around a little bit and they're going to go single file. But outside of that, I expect probably most of the time they're going to be at least two wide, maybe three wide. It just seems like the track position is so valuable anymore that they were hesitant to go just to follow the leader and right. go at a single line, like maybe we've seen in years past. I think you get, five to eight cars that want to work together. They could probably make a pretty decent run on a dominant line. So, and I don't know if I were sitting towards the back of the pack and four to five, six other cars wanted to go to the front, I would jump in, let's get some track position. So I think that really, that idea, that concept forces the drivers to be pushing as much as they can, especially because of the stage breaks and the points that are available. So you can't wait to five to go to get your track position back. You have to get it and then maintain it and kind of defend it. So because of that, it makes it for a very intense, exciting race start to finish.
Now, it is going to be on Fox, and then we'll have five straight FS1 races after that. But I look at NASCAR mainly from a fantasy perspective these days, and this race is as terrifying as any to pick racers, because you can have the best racers in your lineup, and they all get wrecked out. And I mean, you'd like, well, I should have seen that coming. Right. So I'm curious your thoughts on... I guess who you would say is kind of top of the line right now for this week that we should be looking at. And maybe if you've got a dark horse or two guys that are maybe not your main go-to guys every week, but guys that would be worth paying attention to this week.
Yeah, I think I'm not going to go as far as saying Ford is going to win. I'm not going to necessarily predict that. I just think Ford has a good shot of doing it here. A lot of drivers have a great shot of pulling out a victory at a super speedway just because of the nature of the style of race that it is. And if you can survive the carnage, it actually gives you a pretty good shot at having a strong car to get towards the front. So just looking at some of the stats and even some of the things I've been thinking through this week, Ryan Blaney won here last fall. He's on my list. I don't think because of how my picks have gone so far, I've been using him a little bit more than I want. So I've actually got Joey Logano on my fantasy lineup right now, kind of in his place, just because they're both Penske. Joey obviously did not have a great Daytona race. And I don't think that's necessarily an indicator of how they're going to do at every super speedway race. So I think Penske and Ford in general have the potential to do well. I've actually got a little bit Ford dominant on my fantasy lineup this week. Obviously, Joey Logano mentioned him. Michael McDowell's a good super speedway racer, and with Front Row and their alliance with Penske could potentially bring some speed this weekend. And then I've got Noah Gregson on there too. He might even be that dark horse, person that you're talking about. I think he can do well. He's shown that he can drive well in these cars. When he was at Legacy, I was really curious, what's going on? As bad as his season was going, I thought, is this a organization issue or a driver issue or both? Like, yeah. It just, as bad as it was, it just wasn't adding up. And now that he's at Stuart Haas, his numbers are a lot better. And he's made some really strong runs already. I think he had a top 10 at Daytona, maybe? He had a solid run at Daytona. So I think if they can just keep their car clean, they'll probably have a pretty decent race, which is the challenge for all the drivers. Another dark horse, this one's for fun, because he's a good driver. He's in a part-time schedule with this organization, and he's good at super speedways, but maybe just a little bit on the, he's not doing it every week. So maybe at a little bit of a disadvantage there, but I've got Anthony Alfredo on my list.
Wow.
He's just, because if I put him at Charlotte or any other oval or Dover next week, if he were racing those races, I don't think he's necessarily going to get a lot of points from my fantasy team. I think he's got a shot here at Talladega. So they had a pretty decent car at Daytona. I was actually at the Daytona 500 listening to their scanner radio, and they felt like they had a good car, and he was making some good moves. I forget where he finished. I think he may have got involved in an incident or something like that. Either way, I think that there's any other time I wouldn't pick him. So it's kind of like, well, here's an opportunity to save, a tried and true driver and maybe still come out with some points. So yeah. I've got him on there. And then Chris Buescher's on my garage driver. He's done well at super speedways in the past. RFK has done super well working together. Brad Keselowski and Chris Buescher to push each other and get in some 1-2 finishes. And so I think there's potential that he could do well. So I've kind of got him on the sidelines ready to plug in wherever I need him to. So, and this is not on my fantasy pick, but one that I think is going to be really interesting to watch is Shane Van Gisbergen is going to be in the field in the 16 car. So again, at a traditional oval, he's at a little bit of a disadvantage, hasn't run a lot of races like that, but super speedway racing allows for some inexperience to still do well. And he's already had some super speedway races under his belt already. So yeah. I think there's the potential that he could make some noise this weekend. I don't know that he'll win. I don't know that the guys will let him win, but I think he can make some noise nonetheless.
I like it. So I've been saving a couple of guys, Alex Bowman and Brad Keselowski, guys that haven't really been running up to what their potential is or what their expectation is. So I've got both of them in the lineup this week. I do have Eric Jones. He's a driver I have not used yet this year. So I've got him in the lineup as well. And then I got two of these three. And again, I've been kind of sparing some of these guys. So I've got Reddick, Bell, and Byron, all that I've used twice already. One of those will be in my garage. The other two will be in. And they're kind of safe picks if everything else falls apart. Some quality guys in there. But to me, Bowman and Keselowski, I did not trust him to start the year. And he's just started to be more consistent, it seems like, these last couple races. Yep. And again, he's got the experience. He knows what he's doing. And I love what Buescher's been doing this year. And I think Keselowski's finally catching up this year to what Buescher's been doing and not making those same thing you talked about earlier. With Elliott, it seems like there's always some sort of mistake or something that's plagued Keselowski a little bit this year too. But as of late, it's looked a lot cleaner and it looks like he's back. At some point, he's going to win a race again. At some point, I got to believe.
Right. Yeah, I think so. I honestly, I would rather have him on my team than Buescher. I've used him some already, trying to save him a little bit. But if it weren't for the usages, he would be on my fantasy lineup. Absolutely.
Wow, that makes me feel better. Very good. All right. So Josh King, he hosts the Stage Break podcast. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. What are you talking about? You got an episode dropping tomorrow, correct?
I do. Yeah. We'll talk a little bit about some of the penalties that have come out this week. There's actually a decent number of penalties that have been handed out. And it's not necessarily an opinion on them, but maybe just the potential of it changing how some teams operate this weekend. And then I've got something we're going to talk about. If you haven't, if you're looking for a NASCAR driver to be your favorite driver, you're kind of in the market to try to find somebody. listen to this episode before you nail someone down. It might give you a little bit different perspective to think about before you go and lock yourself in. So we're going to talk about that and then preview the weekend at Talladega as well. Maybe just talk a little bit about some of the race information. It'll kind of highlight the qualifying procedure. It's a little bit different at super speedways. And so kind of talk about how all that works. Got some stage lengths and fuel windows that'll maybe play a factor into when teams make some green flag pit stops if it does go green and we don't see cautions. So just kind of give a quick preview and give my ones to watch and a couple of storyline drivers. So yeah, that's about all we're going to be talking about tomorrow.
Awesome. Well, you can catch Josh on his show. He's also on Instagram, is where I follow him at and see him the most at as well. That's the Stage Break podcast there as well. So check him out. Josh, I appreciate you taking time for us. And it's, you know, I get to this part of the week, every single week it happens to me. And I'm like, oh, I need to reach out. I've got basically three guys I reach out to, try to rotate through you guys a little bit for the NASCAR stuff, and appreciate all three of you, yourself, Chris and Caleb. But it's always the last thing I remember to do when I'm getting ready for the show. So I appreciate you on fairly short notice jumping on and helping us out.
No problem. Love to do it. I appreciate you having me on.
You're welcome, man. Hey, enjoy Talladega, and we'll catch you sometime down the road, okay?
Sounds good. You too.
All right. Josh King from the Stage Break podcast there for you as well. Our Sports Stove final lap is presented by Righteous Felon Jerky. Again, now is the time to join the flavor revolution, and you can do it at righteousfelon.com. If you use the promo code STOVE15, you're going to get 15% off your purchase each and every time. I highly suggest the Bootleg and Barbecue. It is my favorite flavor they have, but there's a lot of good flavors. So check it out. Find your new favorite flavor, righteousfelon.com. And the code again is STOVE15. Follow us on social media, Twitter and Instagram. We're at Sports Stove. We will be back live Sunday night, 8 p.m. Fantasy baseball show every Sunday night. Kevin Wilson will be with me, and we'll give you the this week's needed waiver wire pickups and drops, as well as other fantasy baseball advice. Next Monday, we'll be joined hopefully by Ryan Jackson, EKU defensive lineman, and we'll talk EKU sports. Matt Roan, recently the AD, just took a new job over at JMU, and I'm going to turn my application in. We'll see how that goes. We'll be talking EKU sports on Monday. And then next Wednesday, Dad is back. We are talking NFL draft. The night before the draft, we're breaking down everything, predicting exactly how the first round will go. We'll also talk some NASCAR that night as well. Thanks for tuning in to tonight's edition of the Sports Stove podcast. If you like the show, do us a favor. Give us a thumbs up on YouTube. 5-star review on Apple or Spotify or wherever you're listening to us at. Until next time. We'll see you around the Sports Stove.